The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Those are suggestions for getting into what, at least my current understanding of the whole body of breathing, which is part of the larger system around mindfulness with breathing. And seems to me an aspect of being mindful of breathing that we can easily pass through rather quickly on our way somewhere else or to some insight or whatever, wherever we think we're going. And I'd like to encourage really allowing ourselves to experience the whole breath in all its literal depth and power. Let me recap. So first our preliminaries, getting settled in the body, yawning if you like, taking some very intentionally deep, strong breaths to open things up a bit and feel the breathing. Then, one, fully releasing the breaths. As far as I can tell, this is not our habit. Because of being busy, being in a hurry, anxiety, our habit is to take much quicker and shallow breaths. When we meditate, we have time to be patient and let the breaths fully release. And it will be a while to learn what that means. Not learning it conceptually, but learning it experientially, how it feels in the nose, in the jaw, throat, chest, back, belly, lower back. I've been reading recently that some of the research around PTSD using MRIs and fancy medical equipment, some researchers at least feel there's very clear evidence that allowing the exhalations to fully release allows us to release a lot of built-up tension, which is one aspect of trauma healing. Those of us who are not PTSD sufferers can still benefit from this if we participate in the busy, hurried, competitive, stressed out world. So that's part one, learning to fully release. And part of that learning is to find all the ways we don't fully release the breath. I've mentioned some of them, like being in a hurry or controlling the breath. The idea that there's somebody in here who knows how to breathe right. Or I don't know how, but he does. He's the expert. I'll ask him, is this how I should do it? Just keep checking in and learning with the body how to fully release. When we can do this with many of the breaths, if not every breath, but at least many of them, then I suggest gently deepening the breath. The book I'm currently reading about trauma doesn't recommend that, because often we'll overdo the trying and that builds tension. So I'm trying to be careful in how I state this. One can easily overdo the deepening of the breath if we have a goal, some idea of what a deep breath is, how deep it's supposed to be. So many of us have performance-oriented minds. We've learned to perform if we're at all successful in some area of life. There are performance indicators. And many of us have invested a lot of time and energy into that to be successful in our careers or as parents or even as meditators. How do I become a good meditator? I'm not saying this to criticize us, just to recognize how deeply ingrained some of these assumptions and thought patterns are. So being mindful of all that, very gently letting the breath little by little, in a very easy way, drop deeper and deeper and deeper, which means, depending where we're starting from, which can vary from day to day. If you've had a busy, stressed out day with a lot of anxiety and worry, starting point is likely to be quite shallow, fast, tight breathing. Some of us, that's how we generally experience our breathing and assume it's normal. Please don't make assumptions. Normal's one of those other traps we picked up in middle-class existence. Apologies to those who aren't middle-class, but many of us have been influenced by that. Sometimes the starting point is further down, especially if we've done yoga or belly dancing or any number of forms of body work that allows deeper breathing or encourages deeper breathing. Wherever our starting point, just let it gently, with little bits of effort. Some people are worried about controlling the breathing, that could be bad. If it's gentle, if it's not increasing stress and tension, if it actually feels alive and sensitive in there, it's safe. And many of us, because our breathing is not deep, will never get to deeper breathing without gently opening up the container of tightness, but a very patient, gentle process. And as the breath drops into the center of the body, which is down behind and below the navel, you start to find a real strength and energy. And the reason I'm encouraging this today is to weather life's storms, including things like our own fear and anger, to be able to drop down in here. Fear is not sustainable when the breathing is deep. Anger is a little different. Anger is not sustainable when the breathing is soft. It's possible to breathe deep, but tight and hot. That can generate anger. But if it's soft with those full releases, anger is not sustainable either. And instead, we find what I described, a strength, a resilience, a quietness, sensitivity. And as that opens up, then we open to the full body of breathing, which is both the movement in and down, even down into the hips and thighs and up. And in none of this are we focusing somewhere like the nostrils. It's about the whole thing. And as we're experiencing that, we're experiencing it throughout the body. And the energy of it can be flowing into the legs, the shoulders, all over. I'm not saying that will happen every time, but it's possible. For some of us, it's easier to access this standing up, especially if our sitting posture is tight in the hips. Try it standing, or try it lying down. I do this in bed all the time, 10, 15 minutes. And a last little bit of advice. If you don't feel the breath in your belly so much, put a hand on your tummy or both. Standing, sitting in a chair, or lying down, just rest your hands down here, and gentle pressure in the warmth of touch might help you be more sensitive down there. And, or you can, if it's comfortable, put your hands on your lower back for a few minutes and feel how the lower back can move with the breath when the breath is really open and alive. Any observations? How did it feel during that 30-something minutes?
So physically, I really noticed two things. One may just be because I'm having a certain amount of pain in my lower abdomen today, but sitting on the cushion, I was really aware as, you can feel your side muscles in your rib cage and your belly, you know, in your chest expanding and contracting with the breath. But you can really feel it in your bottom too. You can, as a woman, I would call it, you know, like your perineum just sort of pressing yep. into the cushion and coming back. And the other thing that I really became aware of that I hadn't paid as much attention to, but that when Amma Tanasanti was here, she had mentioned is there's a certain amount to which when you're really relaxed and you're breathing in and out, there's like a rocking in the body. There's like a slight kind of movement forward as you inhale and kind of a straightening up as you exhale. It's not, you know, so still, like the whole body, if you really just get quiet, is actually really subtly active. Mm-hmm. And then the third place I really noticed it was when you had us go from just really releasing the breath to kind of putting a little bit of a pause or a wait before you inhale again. In that last little moment before the body says, we really have to inhale, you can really feel the back of your tongue change shape and kind of flatten out and relax as well. Just before the impetus to let it go and draw air in again. So it's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Great. Just, I won't comment except to say others may not experience it exactly like that. We're not all necessarily going to be the same. But a lot of that will be familiar eventually.
Yeah, I found it to be really fascinating, and maybe this is too much a question about the right way to do it or whatever, but one of the things I get really frustrated with in practice sometimes is, am I doing open awareness or am I doing concentration practice? And this seemed, one of the things I really liked about this was it seemed like a blend. It's like we gave the mind, you know, kind of a pasture in which to roam. We're looking at the breathing. We're not looking at other stuff. But then freedom within that. So we're not looking at the nose or what. And I found that to be extremely relaxing. And so I guess I'm wondering, are you recommending that as a general way to practice, or is it more in response to, you know, you're feeling stressed out or, you know, dealing with the difficulties of life, whatever?
No. This is, I think, the middle way. The separation of open awareness and concentration, none of that is in the early teachings. I don't buy all those categories that came in with Buddhist scholasticism.
Yeah, so just a quick follow-up. So,
but that's kind of a whole other topic.
Yeah.
So
I've kind of heard, I think, you know, do both. They're both important, but I sometimes
and you
get
can
the sense
shift a bit this way, a bit right. that way. We don't need to be rigid in what we're supposed to be doing.
Right, but the blend, I guess I hadn't really thought so much about blending the two, so that was, I thought, really helpful.
Right, and the blend may be natural. It may be where they meet. So you don't have to actively blend them. It's just so-called concentration and so-called openness actually have a meeting point. And that might be the middle way.
Yeah, I guess as it progresses, it felt, and oftentimes it feels in other sits, where the breath almost, the notion of breathing really fades to the point where it seems effortless and I almost lose consciousness that it's even happening. Mm-hmm. But everything is still, and then something will come back and all of a sudden my legs will be fallen asleep and it's like, oh, I'm breathing. You know, it wasn't like I was sleeping, but it was mm-hmm. very calm and
yep.
kind of faded.
Yeah, and that's often is part of the natural process. And most of us some of us in particular are really drawn to the calmness, which means we can start to lose the alertness and sensitivity. So part of staying on the middle way is to be with the calmness, but don't get dull as a consequence. So keep looking for the balance where allowing things to be calm and still, and yet alert, alive, bright. The breath is more and more subtle, but it's still there.
I had sort of an interesting experience with this. Is when I stretch, I sort of use that as a means of exploring the way that my muscles and tendons and stuff connect. And I found that when I am experiencing tension, that usually the resolution of that lies not in focusing like exclusively on that area, but in finding the areas that it connects to. And as I've practiced more, I found that that spreads out like wider and wider, and I'll like release something in my neck, and I'll feel it in my hips. And practicing like that release, like it feels like wind, as I understand it right now. So maybe it makes sense that for this, like, instead of just kind of like a incremental or like a release of like a specific part, with this, I felt more like I was just kind of being dissolved. But even having said that, it was really, really amazing to me, like how much air there was still in me when I got to like the extent of what my natural release like of breath would do today. I've been working a lot on getting more, mobility and relaxation between like my chest, jaw, and shoulders. But it was really, I felt like there was almost like a line like right here where I couldn't, like past a certain point. I even experimented with squeezing it out at certain points just to see like how much was really still trapped in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tend to have breath patterns we repeat over and over again, and many of them are limiting. And they're interconnected with how we hold ourselves emotionally. And so often people who do like breath therapy, which I don't do, but I've heard about, they'll talk about how we often leave a lot of stale air inside, but we're in a hurry to breathe in again for whatever reason. So we never really let out all the air and vice versa.
One thing that surprised me was that the more I was focusing on doing this, the less movement that I was detecting in my body. So that actually it felt as though my breathing was like I had stopped breathing, like that there was less and less breathing in my physical body. And that was a surprise to me. And I kept saying, this has got to be wrong. Like, I'm doing less and less. And then the other thing I noticed was that there was a certain dissolving, boundless thing that it really helped me with my mind to actually touch the origin of the breathing, which was not in the body, and it felt like it was a receiving thing from another place. And there was a visual with that. It was very like floating in air. And the only other thing I'll say is the direction of being gentle. It took me to a very baby place, and it was unbearably gentle. And I felt very unarmored, and like I could do this forever. Like, to find the spot where the breathing, where I end that exhale, it was, I think I was on number one out of like 1,000, like of just like being able to detect the end of an exhale. I almost felt like I really couldn't do it. I couldn't really do it. And I could spend a lot of time seeing if I could.
Because it's too tender?
Because the awareness, to do that awareness, was out in space. That's what it felt like. Like the end of the breath was undetectable by sensation. And so in order for me to stay with it, I had to extend my ability to detect. So,
For now, I would say just keep it between nose and perineum.
It wasn't for the whole time in any of those places.
Well, keep looking.
Okay.
The whole thing, of course, expands outward, comes from outward, inward, but to keep some container focus, to be mainly tracking between nose and, say, hips, is as a rough area, not too tight, but present right in here. And there's a kind of awareness, it's coming from out there. I've done practices where, you know, it's coming from the edge of the universe, for example, which is fun and feels real good. But for this, I would recommend being mostly sensitive between the nose, nostrils, and down in the hips, or some people call it perineal breathing. You can feel it down in the base chakra to allow that sensitivity. And some of us be very careful because it can feel really tender, and that tenderness can be a little dicey sometimes because it can feel real vulnerable. And sometimes vulnerability has become unsafe, and we need to watch our boundaries. I'm not saying it's inherently dangerous, but keep an eye on our boundaries, our triggers, because when it gets really subtle, sensitive, tender, there will be an openness, and make sure we're safe. We're in a safe place with safe people. There aren't any power trips going on that could mess with us.
That sounds like a safe place, a tall order too. But of course, you know, feeling tenderness and vulnerability are part of our practice. I'm sure that's what you're saying. For me too, and I find this a very powerful practice. I remember I was here last year as well, and a number of people have also mentioned that, you know, sort of starting. I mean, you sort of started from a different place last year, but focusing, noticing the exhalation, letting that go, and then at some point you drop in, you know, see if you can let a little pause be there as well before the inhalation. And yeah, I just want to also offer, it's extremely powerful for me. I don't want to be too dramatic about that, but there's a real letting go. I'm really noticing that faith piece too, in terms of the controlling of the breath. Can I just let, you know, let the breath be the breath? And then, of course, at that point, you know, we're all going to have our individual experiences. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Yep. Yeah, and it's possible to allow the pause both at the end of the exhalation, but also the end of the inhalation, and wherever we feel it end or wherever our attention is when it ends, just rest there for a moment. And if we're really courageous, in the back of the mind, allow the awareness, this could be the last one. This is where it can lead into what Buddhism calls recollection of death, that we get used to the possibility that there will be a last breath, and we never know which one. We're always assuming there will be more. And it's, if we're ready for this, it's powerful to just let it end and not jump forward to assuming there will be another one. Generally, there is. I haven't had to call 911 yet. But I have been with somebody breathing their last breath. To be there is pretty powerful as well. Yes?
I guess for me it felt when I wasn't lost in thought, you know, I was really able to concentrate on the exhale, you know, that pause between the exhale and the inhale. It at times felt very spacious to me also. And I guess it just never occurred to me to have fear of that. Am I missing the point here?
No. It just you're not required to feel fear.
Well, it just never occurred to me that anything could harm me at that point. Could you just talk about that a little bit more, what you meant about that? And the other thing you talked about is, you know, if breathing, you know, creating anger by breathing. And I did find myself through quite a bit of the talk, you're really getting into some angry stories and just getting caught up in just stories in general. And I guess I was hoping you would talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, and then we should probably have a break pretty soon. You may notice the way it works for me, and I think this is how it generally is. Angry breathing will be kind of sharp. It tends to have clear edges. So if we let the edges soften, that will begin to undermine the anger. When I'm angry, I find my breathing, it's got a strength and a fierceness, which is a bit artificial. It's added. And it helps me maintain my anger, my righteousness, whatever's going on. So to really soften into the pauses so that the beginnings and ends are real soft, that will help. And notice, for those of us prone to anger, and a lot of people get angry, tune into the heat of it, it does have a kind of hot tightness. And if you notice that and not fight it, if you fight it, you make it more tight. But if we sort of release into it and really accept it, some of that edge can come off and you'll notice things begin to shift. Then there are the thoughts. Generally, stuff like anger, I call it pebble tossing. Have you seen the movie Lord of the Rings or read the books? So when they're trying to get into the mines of Moria, and there's that, I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings, and Gandalf is looking at the elven doors, how to find the spell to get in, and one of the hobbits throws a pebble into the pond and awakens the monster, whatever's down in there, the guardian of the gates or something. We do that all the time. We're just throwing rocks in the pond, and they make a splash, and they go down there, and they provoke something. Often, anger, fear, greed, shame, guilt, envy. Thoughts are those pebbles or rocks. And there's some angry energy, and we throw another rock, and we just keep stirring it up, keep stirring it up. So if using breath or yawning or something, our attention goes into strong enough body awareness, we're not actively thinking. That's one way to stop throwing the rocks. And that can happen simply by breathing. Or a good noting practice, which is often taught, one can be catching the thoughts so at least we don't hold on to them. And then the repetitive part can start to space out. And a third way is we replace the anger-provoking thoughts with something healthy, like a thought of forgiveness. And we can try all three approaches, develop some skill with each of them, and then be able to pick and choose what's appropriate. Sometimes we're so stuck, active antidoting is a good idea. But sometimes just note, and if the noting is clear enough, we stop feeding the anger and the rock throwing. But other times we've developed such a head of steam, noting isn't clear enough. We tell ourselves we're being mindful, but then why are we still so angry?
Can I ask you one more thing after the break? I mean,
sure.
I mean, if people want it, so.
Yeah. However, people have been getting up and going to the bathroom, so I'm usually pretty lousy about remembering to take breaks, so I'm feeling.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a break and we'll come back. So stretch, go to the bathroom, get a drink, and let's come back for one more thing, and then we'll stop for lunch.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.